Welcome to Business Innovators Radio, featuring industry influencers and trendsetters sharing proven strategies to help you build a better life right now.
Brilliant Business TV, conversations with leading experts in business. I am your host, Mark Stephen Pooler. We have a wonderful guest today, Tony Klinger. Stay tuned for a great conversation. We are streaming live on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. We're also on the E360 TV network under Fresh Takes. We're also on Business Innovators Radio Network, and we're also on MSPNewsGlobal.com, and we're also going out to Apple TV, Fire TV, Android TV, Roku, and many more. I just want to make an official shout out to our show sponsors, Dreamweaver, Artist Ranch. So after that introduction, let's bring in our incredible guest, Tony Klinger. Tony, welcome to Brilliant Business TV.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you on this auspicious occasion.
Well, I was lucky to have lunch with you in London the other day with the incredible Richard Selwyn Barnett, who introduced us. So I'm really, really looking forward to a conversation with you, Tony. Now, Tony, you are a filmmaker, so my first question is, what films make you most proud?
I think the films that I make that made me most proud, as a film, one of them, there were two. One is The Kids Are All Right with The Who, because despite every problem that could be possible, we managed to get a good film out of it, and that I wrote a book about it. It was the third edition coming out in about a month, called The Who and I. And the other one is Extremes, which is a film that is made it when I was 20. And the reason I'm proud of that is because somebody came up to me after a year or two after it came out. And it was about drugs and sex and rock and roll and young people and all that kind of thing. And he said, your film stopped me going mainline on heroin. And so I figure I kind of saved a life. And he then told me later that there were other people similarly affected, because we really showed what really happened in those desperate moments when people were in a shabby room with terrible equipment in the dirt and doing stuff that is really very nasty to themselves. So those are the two films I was most proud of.
And to save one person's life, even that's an achievement, Tony. But also, that is the power of film, isn't it? You can really shine a light on so many different topics, good or bad, and it really can go out to such a wide audience and really show all different sides of the world to each other.
Yeah, we're releasing a film called Sisters, about the first and possibly last all-female orchestra in Kabul, Afghanistan, which the Taliban immediately closed down afterwards. And their first action was to smash all the instruments so nobody could ever play them. And that message that girls shouldn't be educated or play music was something we felt we had to shout about. We had to make a fuss, which we did and are going to do. And yes, you're right. The film is not just an entertainment. It's a window onto the world and into ourselves. It's a very important medium.
It's very, very powerful, Tony. So my next question is, you must have put yourself in some kind of dangerous situations to get the kind of films out there that you want. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes, that unfortunately is true. I one time put my we were filming in the jungle in the Transkei, some people know it as the Skeleton Coast, and I put my foot into my slipper and trod on a scorpion. I didn't tread on it; it got me, and I immediately pulled my foot out. I didn't know if it was a snake or whatever, and the people that were looking after the house with us in it, because we didn't know what we were doing really, except making a film. And they got the scorpion and killed it. And they said, this bit you? And I went, yeah. They said, you're dead. I felt okay, actually, up to that point. And then the nurse, we had a nurse with the film unit, and she came in and she said, that's what did it. And she said, I have to give you a shot right now. And she gave me a shot of some glucosey kind of thing, I don't know what it was, in my bum. And it was like a horse meat. It was huge.
Oh, wow.
I still felt okay. And then I went to the set, and we were in a boat, and we were doing the scene with alligators or crocodiles, or big sort of lizardy things. And Roger Moore was in the next boat, and he said, I just heard what happened to you. He said, you're dying, yeah? it was, and on the same film, we were filming in the ocean. It was a film called Shout at the Devil with Roger Moore and Lee Marvin. And I was kind of in charge producing the second unit, action stuff. And the director was a man of the second unit, was John Glenn, who went on to do Bond. And we had this big raft, was like pretty big, and it was, say, the size of two cars. And underneath were oil barrels, you know, to keep it afloat. And we had to have a bloke on the side with an elephant gun in case the sharks attacked us. That's what I was scared of. And so we were getting the local guys and saying, can you swim before you go out there? Yeah, because we get more money if we go there. And so they're coming out in the ocean at the breakers. And I could immediately see they couldn't swim. They were hanging on for dear life. And I'm a pretty good swimmer. So I thought, I've got to go get them. They didn't know what to do. And so I went and got them one by one until I was kind of exhausted. And then there was the last fella on the thing, and the waves are breaking it real up in the ocean. And he somehow got off it and went, but the wave took him in. And I was underneath it, and it hit me every time it revolved, like from about 50 yards out to the side. So I was getting hit repeatedly on my back. And I ended up flat on the floor on the beach. And like couldn't breathe because it had broken a few ribs. And I was lying there, and the director came over and says, you're okay, Tony? I went, he said, next shot over here. And left me there to sort myself out. So yes, I've been many times in dangerous situations. It's part of the game. It's part of what you do.
Rather you than me. That sounds terrifying, Tony.
Yeah, well, there are points you can go to which are kind of controllable, or there's other points. I was on another film where the director wanted a shot from the back of a plane that we'd had to build, like an old plane. So it's kind of rickety. It had airworthiness certificate, but it wasn't a modern, safe plane. And he said, to the camera operator, you get in the back seat, and we'll have the guy in the front seat, the actor. And I said, it's not certified to carry that weight. It's too rickety. And he said, no, it'll be safe. Tell him, don't say that. You'd let him go on the plane. And so I said, well, if you think it's that safe, you go and operate the camera, and he'll stay on the ground with me. And he wouldn't. And the guy went up because he was trying to be a good guy, and the plane crashed. He didn't get killed. He was very lucky, but the plane did crash.
Wow. So I'm staying away from you, Tony. Anything to do with work, I want to keep alive. So, Tony, you call yourself a storyteller. Where does that come from? I can see from what you've just been sharing, but go ahead.
Well, I was it's a story I've told a few times, but it happens to be true. I started getting noticed for writing from when I was 8 years old. They used to show, if you're a bit older, you probably know about this, Cadbury's and Nestle chocolate.
Yes, I live by Cadbury's.
Yeah, they used to show films, I suppose they were on 8mm or 16mm, in schools, and then there was like a national writing competition. What did you get from this? What, you know, how's a chocolate get made? That kind of stuff. And I won one competition, and I tied for first place, I think, with the girl sitting next to me in the country. For the other one. And the prize was a load of chocolate to eat and a visit to the chocolate factory. And so in my infantile brain, film, writing, chocolate That's all I needed to know. And my whole life has been a constant search for chocolate. And so that was the start of my storytelling. And then I went to secondary school, and there was, I won't go into the whole sordid details, but there was a teacher doing things he shouldn't have done in a boys' school. To younger boys. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I told my parents, and they didn't believe me because they said, "No, he's a nice man." And nobody would believe me. The boys all knew, but the parents didn't want to know. In those days, they kind of hushed it up, I think. And so to try and get the message out, I formed what was an underground school magazine for both profit and to get him out. And we succeeded in both instances. We eventually, he did get caught importuning outside a gentleman's lavatory in Shepcott Road, Harrow, and he got punished. He got chucked out of being headmaster. And but they did make me give back my profit. I actually had made a good profit, but I knew I could write because I was writing all the articles and publishing it, editing it. So I was kind of writing professionally from when I was 11.
And you said you went to a chocolate factory. Was that the one in Birmingham Harborne?
Yeah. But in those days, you weren't allowed in. I don't know. It was different then. It wasn't a nice like tour or anything. They just took us in and showed us. And it was those days, they were actually making a lot of chocolate there. I think nowadays it's made in Poland or somewhere. But in those days, they were like, it was like Willy Wonka. It was a chocolate factory.
Also, you're a highly acclaimed coach and educator. How did that come about, Tony?
Well, what happened was when I was living in America and we were running what they call like a mini major, it wasn't a giant company, it was a public company, but not huge, making films. And we had another company that made TV shows, like movies of the week kind of thing. And it was kind of the only time I'd ever been in my life where I actually wasn't making stuff. I was like one step removed, which I didn't like. And I sort of fell out of love with the situation. And then somebody I knew offered me to be head of his production company, and we were picking out the car and where we were going to live in a very nice place, and whether the car should be a brown car or a blue car, whether it should be a BMW or a Mercedes, all that kind of good stuff. And then he told me just before I was going to the airport to go back to England to get my stuff to come back there, that he would take all the final decisions, and he knew nothing about production. And it kind of put me off the whole. I just was fed up with it. Came back to England, and with my wife's help, I think she sort of did it, really, applied for a job as an associate lecturer at a film school. And she just wanted to get me out of the house, I guess. She just wanted me not to be there driving her crazy. And so I went there, and I'd never been interviewed for a job in my life before. So I kind of interviewed them, and allowed them to hire me. And it went from there, and I ended up being a director of a university, three departments, and I had 13 promotions in 6 years. It was kind of crazy. But they promoted me out of the thing I liked doing, which was teaching. I found I was really good at teaching, and we won lots of prizes. We won what my students won, like 19 of the 22 major prizes around the world in a couple of years. And just, it's kind of interesting because last night there was the House of Thrones, or whatever it's called, House of Dragons on TV. One of my students is the maker of that.
Yeah. Fascinating stories, Tony.
He doesn't give me any credit for it, and I don't take any credit for that, but it just happens to be that his name's on there. Miguel's watching it. Well done, Miguel.
Well, I'll give you the credit, Tony, as well. Tony, we're just going to go to a commercial break, so please stay where you are. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for part one of Brilliance Business TV. Join us after the commercial break.
Hello, everybody. Cyberchuck 2.0 here. I'm so excited to be able to share my vision of Dreamweaver's Artist Ranch. They say you can't choose your family. Not only am I saying you can choose your family, you get to thrive with your family here at Dreamweaver's Artist Ranch. It's a place for like-minded, individuals to come together to share experiences and gain experiences, not only through workshops, through performances, and through exhibits. This is a place where you can disconnect from the outside world and reconnect into a community of people that there is no judgment. There's only support. And this place is an amazing place to grow and to tap into your highest potential and to be able to show off all your talents. This is a place you can come and network and really thrive. I'm so excited for Dreamweavers Artist Ranch. This is a place where dreams actually come true. I love you all so very much. I'll talk to you all later. Peace.
Welcome back to Brilliance Business TV, conversations with leading experts in business. We're in conversation with Tony Klinger, award-winning writer, director, and film producer. So along with all your films and everything else that you have done, Tony, you also have several books published internationally. What other plans do you have for your writing?
Well, I should continue writing because it's something that if you really like it and you really, it's something you have to do rather than want to do. I have to tell stories. It's kind of compulsory to me. The other element that we found after having several publishers publish my books, all lovely people, by the way, all very, no arguments or anything like that. But I just didn't think the marketing side was brilliant. And so we decided we're going to go into publishing as well. So as of kind of now, the Give Get Go publishing house is starting.
And congratulations.
Thank you. It'll start with my own books because I'm awful cheap. But we'll, I think, hopefully prove the point that with more marketing, you can have a higher profile. And so I've written, you know, several novels that done pretty good, otherwise it wouldn't be on their third editions. And we're now also adding to it one book I'm very proud of that we've just finished called How to Get Your Movie Made by Someone Who Knows. It's me. And that ties in with my coaching and all that kind of thing. Because one of the things I think that gets lost, and it's kind of in the title of your show, is that we're in show business. And the business side of the show is as important as the show side. Because you can have the best thing in the world. If you don't market it and sell it, it'd just be you at home. And I'm not in, you know, the mirror business. I'm in the expressing to other people business. And one of the ways you measure it is not just critical acclaim or things like that. It's actual, you sell tickets. I mean, that's why I'm so proud that the restored version of Get Carter, which my father made, is now in the top 10 of the DVDs and home video in the country 51 years after it was made. I mean, that's some achievement. That's something
that's
great.
That's a big achievement, Tony.
Well, you know, and I've done my best to help that happen. Also for selfish reasons, because we've just made a film that will be coming out very soon called Dirty Sexy and Totally Iconic, which will be out in a couple of months, which is to celebrate that film. Because it's truly iconic and it resonates. It's kind of, I think it's kind of the best inward-looking thing of Britain, a gangster film that there's ever been, and followed closely by Long Good Friday.
And is it like a documentary film? Are they real gangsters or are they actors?
In Get Carter, it was a feature film. And what we're doing is a documentary about that feature film.
Interesting.
It's not the Stallone one. This is the proper one with Michael Caine I'm talking about.
Very interesting, Tony. So what do you see as the future of the creative industries in the UK and globally?
Well, I was saying to my own grandson that the future, if you want to grab it, is happening now. We have the biggest explosion in production facilities there's ever been. I mean, since like the 20s. 1920s, 100 years ago. And it's because the streamers, the giant American corporations, plus people like Sky, which is basically also an American corporation now, they are building facilities all over the country, particularly in the south and southeastern London. And they're vast. And so there will be thousands of new jobs on top of what already exists. And that's very exciting. My father was a very wise old bird, and he used to say to me, they'll never be able to keep up with the demand once the content becomes wider, the avenues become wider. And that was when there was three TV stations. Now there's 1,000 in England. I don't know. It's uncountable. But the danger for those companies is that the cake hasn't got much bigger, but the slices of the cake have got smaller. Yeah. So you have to really hit those targets to try and sustain those as a business, as a going concern, which does concern me. So I feel like Netflix has a potential weakness because its debt load is so high. Amazon has a fortune in cash. Apple TV, Apple have a fortune in cash, so they can sustain it. But when you see the production costs of some of these new series, one is costing $456 million. The other one is costing $800 and something million, one TV series.
Wow.
It also means something else is happening, that if every episode is costing $10 to $20 million and you're an independent feature filmmaker in Europe and your film's costing $1 to $2 million or $3 million, how do you compete? And that's the problem that independent filmmaking will face, because there won't be the facilities, there won't be the crews for them. They'll be working on the big stuff, they get more money. And how do you get a cinema screen? And so it might, as Cineworld is just filed for bankruptcy in America, which is one of the biggest two chains in the world. So the cinemas haven't bounced back as they needed to. And so there's a 30% drop off. And they had to sustain a debt pile. I think they have $5 billion. Netflix is much bigger debt pile than that. And, now the interest rates are going to start to go up. What happens to those people? So it's going to reconfigure. What it does, because the business is a brilliant business, but what it does is it reconfigures itself every so often. So originally it was the major film companies, then it became the major TV companies, then it became the digital companies followed that, and now something else will happen. And that will always occur, because they all want those dollars, they want those subscribers, they want those ticket buyers. Just they'll reconfigure how they get them.
We have to continually adapt and evolve, don't we, Tony, to different times. Now, what can we expect next from Tony Klinger?
Apart from our coaching and our education services that we do, we have the books coming out. We have a radio station we're very proud of called Classic Drama Radio, which you can, it streams, which is programs that we acquired from the 30s, 40s and 50s in America. It's wonderful. And you can just Classic Drama Radio and you'll find it. And we also have films that we're doing. We have film I told you about, Sisters in Kabul, from Kabul. We have The Man Who Got Carter, which is a film about my father. We have the Dirty Sexy and Totally Iconic. It's a love letter from me to my father. Dirty Sexy and Totally Iconic, which is about the film. And we have Solo to Darwin, which is another remarkable person but lady who got a gypsy moth aeroplane, I can go to 60 miles an hour. And it has like twin wings. It's from the 1930s and 20s. And she attempted to fly from England to Darwin in Australia with it, doing the same flight as Amelia Earhart many years ago. Got as far as Beirut, and I won't spoil the story by telling you what then happened. The remarkable thing about this woman is she was suffering from breast cancer, had to have a double mastectomy, and still did it. And she's, as she calls herself, an ordinary woman who does extraordinary things. And the next film we're doing is called Finding Charlie, which is about another extraordinary person, true-to-life person. I don't want to let too much out of the bag, but he is a person who is one of the leading colorectal surgeons in the country. He also is a researcher who's come up with some amazing findings. He's also was a boxing blue for Cambridge. He was a wild man as a youth. He is all of this while he was a functioning alcoholic. And he's been a non-drinker now for 6 years. And he's also a musician, of course, and writes great songs and sings them. And so we have, I think, a pretty remarkable slate of films. Plus, we also are getting ready a couple of feature films, one called Sweet Dreams, which is a rom-com set in London, which for next year, and another one, well, another two, one called Reaper Shadow, which is a dystopian kind of English Mad Max, and another one, which is an action thriller set in Spain, Russia, and America, called Navigator. So, busy.
I'll come to that in a second. I would encourage everyone to check out Tony's work at tonyklinger.com. That's tonyklinger.com.
Tony D. Klinger.
My apologies. Let me edit it now while we're on the screen so that people can see the correct spelling of it.
No, I'm worried I've got it right myself. I very rarely look at my own site. I should do.
There we go. So go to tonydklinger.com. That's tonydklinger.com. tonydklinger.com. Tony, I've really enjoyed having a conversation with you. I was just going to say, you must be so, so busy. What an interesting career you have built for yourself. It must be so exciting working on all of these different projects, getting people's stories out to the world. Is there anything we did not cover that you would like to share?
Well, my mother used to call me and my father, we had scrambled egg brains. It's it's just how we are. No, I think we've covered everything. I mean, I just did the agenda for our team meeting on Thursday this week. We have a team meeting. And I got to 20 points and I thought, I better stop now. I won't include the other bits, we'll wait till later. No, I have a very busy, active life. And one of the principles of our company, Give, Get, Go, which is kind of important, is that we believe that people under 25 and people over 55 are underrepresented both as consumers and decision makers. And so we made a point of making those our priority hirings, although we'll, of course, have everybody from anywhere. And just on the basis that talent doesn't know where it comes from, it doesn't know how old you are, it doesn't know your race, religion, colour, creed, doesn't matter. Talent is talent. And so we look for people that will share that enthusiasm.
And you also have a website address for that, don't you, Tony? So you may just want to mention that.
Of course, it's give-get-go.com. And that tells you all about our company and the corporate kind of stuff. And that's expanded. It's kind of like Topsy. We also do an education site, and we do a coaching site. Every part of it, though, has the same ethos. And the same principles. The only bit that's a bit different is the education bit, because that bit's a not-for-profit. And somebody said to me, oh, so it's a not-for-profit. I said, well, so far, certainly. It wasn't intentional, but now it is. Because we just think that education should be project-led, not subject-led. And so we're demonstrating that that's possible. And people's results prove that that's the case.
Tony, thank you so much for being my guest on Brilliant Business TV. I've really enjoyed having a conversation with you.
And vice versa, and I hope other people will also enjoy it. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Tony. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Brilliant Business TV.
Thanks for listening to Business Innovators Radio. To hear all episodes featuring leading industry influencers and trendsetters, visit us online at businessinnovatorsradio.com today.